This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And the Illinois General Assembly is getting close to its final month of its main legislative session this year. Legislators have been off this week, or back in their districts, they like to say, but they will be back in Springfield next week, beginning the final four-week push to the scheduled adjournment date. Joining us today in our politics roundtable to talk about that is Mawa Iqbal, State House reporter for public radio stations across Illinois. Mawa, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So, Mawa, before this week-long break or week-long time away from Springfield, I don't want to get letters from lawmakers, Governor J.B. Pritzker had called for this legislation in his State of the State address. It passed the House. These are changes to health care law. It was a bipartisan vote. What are some of the things this legislation would do?
Yeah, so basically, he's looking to target what's called utilization management, which is a practice used by insurers to kind of like keep costs low as much as they can for patients, but also for the insurance companies themselves. Though a lot of critics say that what can actually end up happening, an unintended consequence of this, is that it delays care for patients, which can ultimately result in higher costs in the end for these patients. And so basically, not to get too into the weeds, but, you know, top level view of what this Healthcare Protection Act would do, it would ban step therapy. So the process in which insurance companies, you know, recommend that patients take other medication before the ones prescribed by their doctor. It would also address prior authorization. So making sure that, you know, insurance companies can't basically authorize a treatment for specifically for mental health patients before a doctor can. Also targeting junk insurance, which are these short-term health insurance policies that are cheap and don't really cover much. So just really kind of cleaning up a lot of these practices that, you know, proponents of this bill, like Pritzker say, are kind of predatory towards patients.
What have you been hearing as far as opposition to this legislation goes?
Yeah, so most of opposition, of course, is from the insurance companies. They're saying that, you know, at least initially when they first, when Pritzker came out with this bill, they were like, oh yeah, we are completely opposed. You know, utilization management is a way for us to keep costs down for all people, you know, involved. But with the few amendments that have been filed and with more negotiations that have been happening, the insurance companies are now sort of leaning towards neutral on the issue. And it's interesting, I was listening to this one hearing on it last week where they had representatives from the insurer side come in and talk about it. And they said that, you know, we don't agree with it ideologically, like we're just ideologically opposed to what this legislation calls for. But we understand, you know, what you're trying to do here, and we will stay neutral, basically.
Yeah. Well, I guess getting a big interest group to actually go neutral on legislation is a sort of a victory for the people who are pushing for those changes in Springfield.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So, okay, the healthcare changes, that's just one of many priorities the governor outlined in his State of the State address a couple months ago. I remember him also talking about maternal health, getting rid of the grocery tax, funding to help meet the needs of the migrants that are being sent to Illinois from Texas. How are those other priorities doing in the legislature?
Yeah, so one piece that, you know, kind of along the healthcare vein that he really like pushed hard on during his State of the State was Black maternal health specifically. He talked about how the Black maternal mortality rate in Illinois is disproportionately higher than that of white mothers. And according to the Illinois Department of Public Health, in Illinois, Black women are three times more likely to die during or a year after pregnancy due to pregnancy-related causes than their white peers are. And so during his State of the State, he talked about how he wanted to sort of curtail that, kind of address that disparity. And that legislation has been moving through. It's basically providing more funding and putting more investment into community-based care. So things like doulas, midwives, lactation consultants, which are commonly used by Black women in replacement or in lieu of, you know, going to a hospital. And so that's been moving through the legislature. It looks like it will probably pass. It's got a lot of support. The child tax credit, though, that which is another thing that he talked about in, you know, in along the same lines of addressing Black maternal health, that one has been stalled. And that's something that's been stalled, I think, for a few years. I know that for the past few years, there's been an effort to create a permanent child tax credit. And that one hasn't been moving at all the session. But I will say, though, there is a bill that Senate Majority Leader Kimberly Lightford had introduced, which would create an agency specifically focused on early childhood, which is something that Pritzker talked a lot about, was investing in early childhood. That is moving through pretty well through the legislature. That looks like it's going to pass. And as far as the other last big thing that he hit on in his State of the State, the migrant influx and addressing funding for the migrant crisis, there have been some bills to funnel money to new arrivals into schools. So a lot of these migrants who have children who are going to Chicago and Chicago area schools, there's been some bills introduced to increase funding for that. We haven't seen movement on that yet, or even on an overall budget yet. So a lot of these other budget line items, like what you mentioned, the grocery tax, that hasn't come through yet. But I'm sure once we do see a budget, probably, towards the end of the session, then we'll get a better idea for how his those priorities are faring.
Yeah, maybe we'll get a budget before, I don't know, 11 p.m. on the last scheduled day of session.
If we're lucky.
Yeah. All right. So moving on from the governor, you covered some other legislation last week that caught our attention. This would allow some young adults in Illinois prisons to transfer to juvenile facilities so they can get more access to educational and mental health services. What are supporters hoping to accomplish with that?
Yeah, so they're saying that basically, there's kind of a gap in like the programs that are offered and through, the Department of Corrections for people to try to make sure that they don't, reoffend, that to try to make sure that once they are, released, they're reintegrated into society and recidivism rates are lower. And so they're hoping that, with giving access to this population, 18 to 21 year olds, giving access to these educational and job training, mental health and therapy services, that they'll end up having an easier time transitioning back into society once they are done serving their sentence. Of course, there is some opposition though from the Republican side. They're saying that this poses a potential security risk to have older people coming into the juvenile facilities. But again, it's a Democrat support bill. It got a lot of traction and a lot of support through the Senate. So it needs a full vote from the Senate before going over to the House. So I don't see it really getting stalled since it's already pretty far along the process.
Yeah, this area of emerging adults, I think, is the term that the criminal justice advocates use, is that, the idea that, we have a juvenile cutoff at, I think it's 18, but really, I guess until someone's in their mid-20s, their brain is not really fully developed, and questions about accountability and punishment and rehabilitation there. Something to keep an eye on. What else are you keeping an eye on as we're heading into these last weeks of session?
Yeah, I mean the budget.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the big ticket item. If it's like anything, in years past and sessions past, it's probably like you said, what will come up super, super late, just because they have to talk to all these different stakeholders and try to get people, on their side, and there's it's also interesting this year, Pritzker's trying to, push for a balanced budget, a more conservative spending bill, right? So there's not much spending to go around. And so I think that kind of presents a challenge to lawmakers, when figuring out where to spend this money. Because of course, everyone wants money. All these different programs and groups and stuff and state agencies, they would like to see cash to do things. And so, yeah, I'm definitely looking out for the budget. I'm also looking out for more funding for migrants and new arrivals, which will probably come within the budget, just to see how that fares. And like I mentioned too, that bill that would fund or increase funding for migrant students. So that has only gotten a subject matter hearing, which is pretty much when the bill sponsors come into a committee hearing and just talk about it. Hasn't received any action yet, so we'll see. Yeah, we'll see how that goes and where it goes.
Mawa Iqbal, State House reporter for public radio stations across Illinois. Thanks for making the time to be with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and our focus shifts now to Washington politics. As always, with us to help make sense of it all is Linda Kenyon, who covers the Congress and today the U.S. Supreme Court for Illinois Public Media. Linda, good to be talking with you.
I'm happy to be back.
So you covered the Supreme Court arguments in former President Donald Trump's immunity case this week. We are actually taping this conversation Thursday evening, so I guess for you it was this morning. What are your takeaways from covering these arguments?
You know, it's a very interesting case where the court is trying to decide if a president of the United States, not just President Donald Trump, because all cases that come before the Supreme Court are precedent-setting cases and they affect the future of the country, they're trying to decide if presidents have what the Trump team is calling blanket immunity. In other words, immunity from prosecution for anything a president may do while in office. And in this case, it has to deal with the president's efforts, the former president's efforts to remain in power after the 2020 election loss. And so the high court heard from the Trump attorney first, and then the prosecuting attorney second. And then it was a barrage of questions from each of the nine justices on the Supreme Court. The most overarching arguments that were heard, I would say, are whether there is such a thing as blanket immunity for a president that can be distinguished between official acts and unofficial or personal acts. And how do you make that distinction? The defense argued that anything that a president does in office is immune, because if a president is not immune from prosecution, then any president would be basically afraid to do anything for fear of being prosecuted after they leave office, and that this chilling effect would basically make a president completely powerless. The prosecution argued that a blanket immunity or even a limited immunity for personal versus official acts is not what the founders intended. The founders said that no one was above the law. And the prosecution also stated that blanket immunity is not within the constitutional structure and that a president must stand accountable for his or her actions, especially if they are criminal in nature.
I'm reminded of the, this is before my time and before your time, but the Frost-Nixon interviews where Frost asks Nixon if, you know, he can do something illegal if it's in the best interest of the nation or something. And Nixon says, well, when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal by definition. It sounds like that's the argument the Trump team is advancing here.
The Trump team did bring up the Ford pardon of Nixon, and saying, you know, was Ford wrong in doing so because a president does not have immunity. A president should not be pardoned for committing crimes while in office. And then we had statements from, for example, Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson saying that if a president has immunity from prosecution for clearly illegal criminal acts and does not have to face any accountability for those actions, that turns the Oval Office into a seat of crime.
Every Supreme Court case is high stakes for someone, at least, right? A case doesn't get typically to the Supreme Court unless it's not important to someone. How high are the stakes on this case for everyone?
The stakes are extremely high. In fact, Justice Neil Gorsuch made it clear that he even said, you understand that what we're deciding here, he was talking to the prosecution, you understand what we're deciding here is not just about this case. This is about the future. This is going to affect the lives of Americans for decades to come. This is about maybe even for, you know, 100 years from now. So, yes, every case that comes before the U.S. Supreme Court is a difficult case. This may be one of the most difficult cases. It's certainly one of the most consequential cases of this particular Supreme Court term. And so whatever the justices decide is going to be watched very closely. Now, there are a number of avenues that they can take. They can decide the absolute immunity split into two factions, being the immunity for criminal acts for official acts versus immunity for criminal acts for personal acts. Or they could remand individual questions back to the lower court. Either way, what that means is there is likely going to be a delay, and that the soonest that there would be an agreement, a decision by the Supreme Court, would probably be at least a couple of months down the line, if not more. And that means the special prosecutor's case, and of course, the other criminal cases involving Donald Trump, he faces four criminal cases, could all be affected by this decision.
Yeah, and could all be delayed. And we're seeing the New York case fraud trial is moving forward. There's been plenty of coverage of that. And then the Georgia case is separate. But certainly these two federal cases about the documents and then about the involvement in January 6th, as we've been talking about here, is going to be held up and seems unlikely to come to trial before the election. Of course, we can't predict the future, but any sense of a timeline on this decision? Is this going to be in the late June dump of decisions before the justices head off on their summer vacations and lecturing and so forth?
Yeah, it's very likely that we'll have some kind of an indication around June. And then we will wait to see what the fallout on that is. And then they won't be back again until the first Monday in October.
Linda Kenyon, thank you as always for keeping us up with what's been happening in Washington. Appreciate your time. Have a good weekend.
Thank you, Brian. You too.
Let us know what you think about what we've been talking about. You can email us anytime, day or night. talk@21stshow.org is the address. talk@21stshow.org. Visit our website, 21stshow.org, to find all the ways to get in touch with us. Coming up after the break, a brief history of the Illinois Central Railroad, the main line of Mid-America. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.